Okay, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the first in what will hopefully be an ongoing series of the greatest halachic hits of COVID, meaning during the last 9 months, if we can believe it, when we've been in lockdown or haven't been able to, you know, live our lives in general and do what we normally do, both generally and particularly in our quote-unquote Jewish lives, we've had to adapt to this time. And because of that, there have been some significant halachic questions and halachic decisions that now looking back, and we see a little bit in hindsight, we see how complex the issues were and how carefully and deliberately the halachic authorities of our days handle these questions. And when I thought of this series, a story came to mind. A story, some of you may have heard it. It involves Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim Brisker, who was the Rav in the town of Brisk in Lithuania. And the story goes that someone in Brisk asked Reb Chaim, can one fulfill their obligation of the four cups on Pesach with milk? So what did Reb Chaim do? Reb Chaim gave the gentleman money to buy wine. But his wife noticed that he gave him a particularly large sum of money. So his wife asked him, well, this the amount of money you gave him is a little bit more than what a bottle of wine costs. Why did you give him so much? So Reb Chaim said that if he's asking if he can make kiddush and drink, fulfill the mitzvah of the four cups with milk, so it's pretty clear that he doesn't have meat. So I thought, in addition to the wine, I'll also give him a contribution to be able to purchase meat for Yom Tov. I think what this shows is that in a halachic question, there's more than just the technical details of the question itself. The question comes from somewhere. The question comes from a person's personal circumstances, different situations that are going on in the world. And therefore, when we look at questions, we have to analyze more than just the technical issues. And that's what the posek has to do as well. But also consider where the question is coming from. And there are many, many examples of this in the halachic literature. Another one that comes to mind, we're approaching Hanukkah, is there's a question that was asked in the 1600s. If someone accidentally fried with butter, with dairy butter, in a meat pot that was that meat cooked with, in it within a day, and therefore the butter would be considered baster b'chalav, a mixture of meat and milk. So can you use that to light the Hanukkah candles with? So it's a fascinating discussion, and it touches on the point, well, you're not allowed to get benefit from a mixture of meat and milk, but we say that mitzvot aren't subject to benefit. But it goes back and forth. Ultimately, he decides that that you would not be allowed to. But what you have to consider with that question, in addition to it being in a fascinating halakhic discussion, is where was it coming from? It was coming from the reality that people were so poor that they saved every bit of food and supplies that they had if they wanted to use it to light the Hanukkah candles. The thing in general, when looking at halakha, it's important to consider what were the circumstances when the question was asked. And this is, of course, true with many of the COVID questions that we're going to deal with. For example, in 2019, if the question was asked, can I get together with my family on Zoom for a Seder? So the technical issues may have been the same, but the response and the place the question was coming from would be very different. You'd probably answer, well, why don't you invite your parents over? Oh, well, they live far away. Okay, maybe someone in their neighborhood could invite them over, meaning it wouldn't even be a consideration. But this past year, it really started with a ruling by this group. It's the Association of the Sages of the West called the Igud Chachmei HaMarav. They were a group of Moroccan rabbis, and they came out with a ruling in the middle of March that because of the extreme circumstances this year, it would be permissible for families to get together on Zoom for the Seder. And it justified it through several halakhic points. And while this ruling immediately got backlash, it got backlash really from all circles, I think it's important to remember where this was coming from. It was coming from people who presumably were God-fearing Torah scholars, and they understood the dire nature of the situation and found sources, maybe even somewhat compelling sources in halacha, to allow something that they normally wouldn't allow. But you also have to understand why the vast majority of other halakhic authorities rejected this, despite also being fully aware of the dire nature of the situation. So I'll share my screen. I also posted a source sheet in the chat. So this is a translation of the response that was written by this Igor Chachmei Amarav, the Association of the Sages of the West. So they said, "We've been asked by a learned Jew whether it's permissible to utilize ZooMap for the Seder night to connect elderly people to their family members if they are unable to be with them due to the ongoing coronavirus epidemic, so they can all do the Seder together via the app." So here was the conditions that they were considering. One screen would be in the home of the elderly person and another screen in the home of their family. And using Zoom, they would be able to see each other, speak to each other, and hear one another. And they said the Zoom program and the computer would already be on before the festival begins, and nobody will have to do anything at all on Yom Tov itself. So this is how they're framing it. They're saying that the device would not have to be turned on. If it was already on, they're assuming, and we'll see if we can question that assumption, but they're assuming that it wouldn't pose a halakhic problem. So the way they present the question is, the halakhic question is this: can one use this app for purposes of making the Seder the way we described as a one-off leniency to be used only in this time of great emergency? So it's important to recognize they were not saying that this should be a precedent, and that in general we shouldn't get together for Seders, and we should, if it's fine to do it over Zoom. They were saying, due to the extreme situations of this year, where unfortunately many, many people were alone for Pesach, can families connect through Zoom? And they assumed that the way it would be set up is the devices would be turned on beforehand, but that it wouldn't be a problem to speak and to see or make the images on the screen. So they say that there are three central issues relevant to this question. So one, there's operating the device on Yom Tov. Two, it's a weekday type behavior. And three, the concern that people will use this leniency in the future when it's not called for. So I'll just ask for points two and three, because they are somewhat subjective. What do you feel? Number one, is it a weekday type behavior, meaning a behavior that would be inappropriate for Shabbos and Yom Tov and would therefore desecrate or diminish the character of the day? And number two, the concern that people, once the cat is out of the bag, that people will use the leniency in the future. How compelling do you think these concerns are?
I think they're very compelling.
So you think basically once, so as far as the Uvdin Dechol, the weekday behavior.
Mm-hmm. I think they have zero value.
That's Moish?
That was me.
Okay, so Moish says zero, that they are not compelling. Professor Sakin says that they are compelling.
Moish, take out your sword.
We're all on Zoom, so
I agree with Paul, because it's like the slippery slope.
So that's on point number three, that once the cat is out of the bag, then people are going to use it when it's not absolutely necessary. Right.
By the way, just to placate Moish, I want to say that
we're still friends.
Just because I think it's a real concern does not mean I don't think it. There isn't a good reason to do it.
That's okay, Paul. We're still friends.
Yeah.
I'll be Christian and you'll be Jewish.
Okay. And what about the weak type behavior point?
The whole thing is nonsense. It's utter nonsense. You might have noticed that they haven't considered as a factor at all, let alone the factor, the fact that it's an emergency for the entire world for the first time it's ever happened. And that's it. There's no other issue. There really is
so
no other.
So that's the point that this responsive is making. And even those who disagreed, and we'll see one at the end, fully acknowledge that. It's not something that wasn't acknowledged across the board. But here it says that there are three major concerns. One, which some people find compelling, is the concern that once the cat is out of the bag, people are going to use this leniency in the future. And two, what about the weekday type behavior?
There's a fourth issue here.
That's my point. That's not the issue. None of that is the issue. How can you talk about the worldwide emergency within the Jewish people? That's it.
That's true. But Mike, and see if I'll get to you in a second. I think that's exactly the point. Is the concern is that it is a unique situation, but we are still looking to the future. And there is going to be, God willing, life after COVID. And we don't want, I think the concern that they're acknowledging, I think they're acknowledging it's a real concern. We don't want to establish a precedent where now we're not able to reverse. I think that's where I'm coming from.
There's a fourth concern that perhaps you haven't raised or maybe you've considered is the fact that, you know, the absence of contact can actually cause people mental anguish. And which can manifest itself in different ways amongst individuals to the point of depression. And there are leniencies when a person does fall ill under such circumstances to allow certain things to happen. I'm not saying to break halakha, but you have to consider the potential that could cause a person as well.
So 100%, and I will touch upon that towards the end. I will say that, and there were several poskim who made that distinction. And again, it can be a gray area, but the distinction between the unpleasantness, maybe even significant unpleasantness of being alone, as opposed to any type of danger. And you know, we'll basically be looking at it in a case that we're assuming is not, that the individual is not in danger. But I'll notice that in a tshuva, in a responsive that was written by Rav Hershel Schachter, he makes that distinction.
Rabbi?
Yes, Rabbi.
Rabbi, where does it say...
I'm sorry, we have this is Avram on the phone. So I'll just have Avram and then I'll get to Charlie.
So it's been asked in the past on Shabbos, if this is an important TV program for Yontif, if the TV program is closed on with a timer, can someone watch? And the rabbis have said no.
So Avram, so what you said is actually exactly what this group of rabbis said. They said that they reject the argument that it's a weekday activity because we're using it for a Seder. We're not using it to watch an athletic competition. So it is a concern, and the authors of this responsum mentioned this as a concern. Joel, I'll get to you in 1 second, but just to respond to these points, so this group of rabbis said that these are potential concerns, but they go through each of them, and I'm just going to put on mute, but please feel free to unmute at any time. So this group of rabbis addressed these three points. They said, one, what about operating the device on Yom Tov? Because the way they said the protocol that they the protocol that they presented was preferable to leave it on. But if you're not able to, but if something happens, they said that one could rely on opinions that you can actually adjust electrical devices on Yom Tov.
Rabbi?
Yes, Charlie.
Sorry, I was expecting to get back on. Can I throw something else into the mix here?
Throw it in.
Where does it say anywhere that families need to meet on a Seder night?
So there's a precedent from the Karban Pesach, but you're right. There's no halachic obligation for families to meet. I think the concern here is that it enhances the holiday, and the fact is that being alone on Pesach is very difficult. Well, it's emotionally difficult. It's difficult as far as preparation.
One can argue, as we're getting older, baby boomers, whoever, right, are having harder trouble hearing. And yet, in Orthodox synagogues, we don't have microphones. So, someone said it's a slippery slope. And it is, because you can say, well, if you can do Zoom on the Seder night, you certainly can have a microphone in an Orthodox synagogue.
Right, meaning that could, if you're accepting the premise that speaking into an electronic device that projects your voice elsewhere is permitted, so then it would follow that, at least from a Shabbos or in this case Yom Tov perspective, that it wouldn't be problematic. We'll see if that's necessarily a foolproof argument. And another issue with shuls is that generally a projection of a voice through an electronic device isn't considered the actual voice. And for some mitzvos, like hearing the Torah, you actually need to hear a human voice. But right, that would be a slippery slope, and it would seem that it would follow to allow something like that. But these rabbis said that this was only a one-time leniency. So they said, one, as far as using electricity on Yom Tov, so they say there were several authorities who permit operating electronic device on Yom Tov. We'll see why that could be. Even though they said initially leave it on, but if it goes off, they said you can rely on those opinions. Number two, what about that's a weekday type activity? So they said that it's, that's for a mitzvah purpose. And it's, to the contrary of denigrating the holiday, it's allowing it to be enjoyed. And point number three, as far as will people use this leniency or this procedure again, so they assume that everyone understands that it's an emergency situation, and they're not concerned that people are going to use it again, and it's necessary in response to the great difficulty in spending Pesach alone or spending Pesach away from family. And he said, just like someone who's in distress or someone who's ill, we allow leniency. So they say that this would be in a similar category. And in fairness, I will, not to be unfair, but I will note that I have the original, the original in the Hebrew. And you'll just note the way it was printed was, I'll scroll down. So they say that is rock litzorak lela seder tufshin pei, that was only for the needs of Seder night for 2020, but this doesn't apply to other years. So they made it pretty clear that this was an emergency ruling for due to the extreme circumstances, and this was not a precedent to be continued. But they said, one, operating the device on Yom Tov could be allowed. Number two, that it's not an activity that denigrates the spirit of Yom Tov. And number three, there's not a concern that it'll be used in the future. So right after this ruling was released, it was met with a lot of opposition. As Shlomo Zuckier mentions in an article about this in the Lair House, he says the response was immediate and powerful and was attacked by Karen Ashkenazic Chief Rabbi of Israel, David Lau, even more forcefully by former Sephardic Chief Rabbi Shlomo Amar. Keep in mind, the premise of this ruling was they were following in a tradition of Sephardi rabbis who permitted using electricity on Yom Tov, which we'll see was prevalent in Rabbi Yovadi Yosef, says that it was president, as it was prevalent in Egypt to allow this. And actually, one particular Ashkenazi authority, the Aruch HaShulchan, one of the great halachic authorities of the turn of the 20th century. So he actually has a letter where he permits operating lights on Yom Tov. We'll see what the basis for that is. But immediately this was met with a lot of opposition. And soon after, several rabbis who had originally signed on to this had removed their signatures. So within a couple of days, seven of the original 14 signatures were made. So this ruling was met with a lot of opposition, really from all circles: Sephardi, Ashkenazi, Haredi, modern Orthodox, religious Zionist. It was widely opposed. But as Moshe says, and has even when reading through it, it's clear that the situation this year was unusual, and their arguments were based in halakha, and it came out of a sincere effort to help people cope and enjoy this Yom Tov. But it was by and large disagreed with. So first I want to discuss what are some of the halakhic issues with electricity. Meaning one of the points of this ruling was that on Yom Tov, at least, you can rely on authorities that permit operating electronic devices. So it's something I think is very familiar to those who are Shomer Shabbos, that we don't operate electronic devices on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And it's especially in our technologically advanced world, where we don't notice the difference. It's not like I'm, plowing and pruning and doing all these things on Friday, and then come Shabbos and I don't do it anymore. But one thing that's very noticeable about a home that's at Shomer Shabbos is that electronic devices aren't being operated. So what's the reason? Why don't we operate electronic devices on Shabbos and Yom Tov? What are the halakhic issues? So one issue is the malacha of mavir, of kindling. So it was H, a fire. So what's the problem? When electricity was first developed, so probably the common electronic device was the incandescent light bulb. So how does an incandescent light bulb work? And I don't know if there are any electrical engineers here who could correct me, but there's a filament. Then the filament gets very hot. Doesn't catch on fire, hopefully, but it gets red hot. So the Rambam, based on understanding of the Gemara and Shabbos, says that this would violate the malacha of Eish, of Mavir. And he says in source 3, Makamim es barzel, someone who heats iron in order, kadei letzarfo b'mayim, in order to strengthen it, they would heat it, and then it would be completed. Hareza talaz Mavir v'chayim. That it's a derivative of kindling, and it would be Torah level violation. And this was the understanding of many poskim of incandescent light bulbs. And actually, Rav David Tzvi Hoffman in the 19th century also says that this is, even though there's not an actual flame, because it gets very hot, because there's an electrical current, that would be considered fire, and it would be Torah level prohibition.
Rabbi?
Yep.
What about a situation where you have you know, lights turning on by themselves, you know, with a timer.
Right.
So is that still kindling if it's an incandescent bulb?
So no, you're not doing the kindling. Timers is a different discussion, but the assumption of timers is you're allowed to set in motion an action that, you know, will continue into Shabbos or will occur on Shabbos. But right, if one did it themselves and it was an incandescent light bulb, that would be a Torah prohibition of lighting a fire. But a timer, the timer does it and not you.
So let's say you were on Zoom, you had Zoom on a timer, right? You had Zoom on a timer for Yontif.
Right. So they said that that would be preferable, at least to leave it on, but you could adjust it. The problem is, and this is what some of the other poskim who oppose this ruling pointed out, is I don't know about you, but even with this meeting, you have to refresh, you know, every couple of, you know, every so often. Many Zoom settings, if you don't do anything for 40 minutes, it shuts off. Practically, it's difficult. But that's assuming, and we'll see also if that's necessarily foolproof, that's assuming that there isn't an issue with speaking into the microphone or being in front of the camera. So this is from the perspective of the electricity. But you're right. If you could avoid operating it, so then perhaps whether you consider it fire, we'll see. It's probably would not be considered fire. You wouldn't actually be doing anything yourselves, and maybe in and of itself that could be allowed. So. In the course of this discussion, we're going to look at whether it's a Torah prohibition or a rabbinic prohibition. So why do I care? Meaning, why do I care whether it's a Torah prohibition or a rabbinic prohibition? Right? We follow the Torah and we follow the rulings of the rabbis. Right? So why do I care? What's the difference?
More flexibility if it's rabbinic.
Right. So there are certain situations where there are allowances for rabbinic prohibitions, but they wouldn't be for Torah prohibitions. Where it comes to Shabbos and Yom Tov, it's particularly relevant to asking non-Jews to do something for you. That many times if it's a rabbinic prohibition and there's another consideration, so it's a double derabanan. It's called a shvus de shvus. So if it's this, because asking a non-Jew to do something is rabbinic. And if you ask them to do something that's rabbinic, so that is allowed in some cases where it's for the sake of a mitzvah, where there's another type of great need, whereas the leniencies are much fewer if it's considered a Torah prohibition. So according to the view that electricity is fire, so that will be a stringency. So when we're discussing this issue, what do we consider it? Whether we what malacha, what particular type of labor do we consider? Whether it's Torah or rabbinic. So be careful what you wish for, because on one hand, in the case of fire, if we consider it fire, so it would be a Torah prohibition. But on Yom Tov, you're gonna have an advantage. What's the advantage, right? How do we light candles on the second night of Yom Tov? We have an existing flame. And that's because on Yom Tov, you're allowed to do certain labors that are, Torah says, because of ochel nefesh, the preparation of food. But the Gemara says that also includes things that are those types of labors, even if they're not used in the preparation of food. But so what's the problem of fire on Yom Tov? So if you look at source 5, while there are allowances to kindle a fire, you're not supposed to, actually rabbinically on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to light a fire from scratch. The Mishnah in Beitza in source 5 says, "Ein motzin asa or lo min ha'etzim lo min ha'avanim." You can't produce fire neither from wood or from stones, lo min ha'afar, not from dirt, Why not? The Gemara says, my time. I'm sure they call molid biyomto because it's something called molid, like giving birth or creating. We'll see that's very relevant to with our discussion about electricity. So you can't light a fire from scratch on Yom Tov, but if a fire is already lit, then you can expand it, you can transfer it, you just can't create it from scratch. So this was the premise, I think, that the group of Moroccan rabbis who permitted Zoom were basing the allowance to adjust the computer on Yom Tov. That if it's fire, so on Shabbos you couldn't adjust it, but on Yom Tov there would be allowances to. So the question is, can we say that adjusting electrical devices or turning on, let's say, electric lights is not creating the light from scratch? That's only adjusting it or expanding it when it's already there. Does anyone, an electrical engineer, have a particular expertise in this area? So it was a subject of some debate among the earlier authorities when electricity started to become prevalent. So some felt that it would be considered turning on an electric light would not be like making a fire from scratch, that the current was already existed somewhere and you're just expanding it. And this was the opinion of many rabbis in Egypt. It was the opinion of, as I mentioned, the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Kilmichael Epstein, who lived in Nevardik in Lithuania. And actually in Epstein's letter, so he says that this is what he thinks it is, but you know, the electricity, it's not so common that, you know, we don't have to go so into it. You know, it's not going to be something that's so relevant. So there were some who felt that way, though many other authorities, especially later on when there was more of an understanding about how electricity worked, I think it was understood that turning on a light would be considered like creating the fire from scratch and not using something that's already existing. And that's what Rav Ovadia Yosef said, that he says that there was in source 7 that there was this practice to allow lighting electric lights on Yom Tov. But he said it's based on a misunderstanding of how the technology works. And therefore he says even places that have this practice, it's incorrect and you know, should refrain from doing it. But those who have this tradition shouldn't be rebuked harshly, meaning they're following in a certain precedent. But he said it's based on a misunderstanding of how the technology works. I'll just note that when electricity became more widespread, and you know, and then the poskim had to respond to this. So Reb Chaim Ozer Grudzinski was one of the great, not the, the greatest halakhic authority in Lithuania in the early part of the 20th century. So he would actually recite Havdalah for the Borei Me'orei Ha'esh. He would use an electric light bulb just to show that electricity is really fire. Now there's a question whether if you have an incandescent, whether you should make a bracha, but it just shows that this was something that many authorities wanted to establish the status of. So now the question is this. If we consider it fire, many authorities, not even many, I think most authorities say that electricity being fire really only applies to something like an incandescent light bulb or something that gets hot. What about other electric devices? I have my computer right here. It's not getting hot. I can touch it. It's not hot. We said that it could be a violation of Aish, of fire, if it gets hot. But what if it's not getting hot? So then do I have a problem? Then is it allowed? So there's a lot of discussion about what the status of electronic devices that are not incandescent light bulbs, that don't get hot. And the question is, why would they be problematic? for that matter, if at all. So another consideration is another malacha, another one of the 39 forbidden labors, called makah b'patish. Makah b'patish means the final hammer blow. That when certain items were being developed, so they were fully formed, and then there would need to be a final blow to make it usable. And this actually applies not only with work with a hammer, but with any type of action that transforms something from not usable to usable. So for example, and then, well, this is a common question where this applies, is what about bottle caps in Shabbos? Question is, when I open a bottle, am I making a new bottle cap? So it could be a difference between plastic and metal, but if you're making some transforming something from non-usable to usable, that could be a Torah prohibition of makah b'patish, of the final hammer blow. However, if something is or has already been made or is used and then is opened and closed, so then that would not be an issue of makah b'patish. So the Chazon Ish, or Rabbi Shai Karelitz, passed away in the early 1950s, so he held that electricity, other than incandescent light bulbs, would be a violation of both makah b'patish, the final hammer blow, and of bone, of building. Why? Because you have a circuit, right? You have everything is set up. Then once you turn on the switch, you flip the switch, then it becomes usable. So he says, it's like the final hammer blow. You have something that's all ready, you do one action, and then you make it usable. And this opinion is shared by Rusher Weiss, one of the great halakhic authorities in our time. He says that even LED lights, which don't get hot, and the assumption is that it's not fire, would be a violation of the final hammer blow. Because he says that he bases it on the Talmud Yerushalmi, that if something, anything that creates something new, if it doesn't fit into other categories, would be considered a violation of the final hammer blow. So that's one perspective. Even if you're not dealing with fire, you still have this issue of the final hammer blow, which, by the way, would be an issue on Yom Tov as well. However, in the, must have been the 1940s, I think, when the Chazon Ish came out with this ruling about electricity being either building or the final hammer blow, so a relatively young Torah scholar named Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who later on became one of the great halakhic authorities in Eretz Yisrael and in the world, so he argued with the Chazon Ish. He rejected the argument that it's makah b'patish, that's the final hammer blow. Because he says that the final hammer blow means that you create something that now exists, right? Something doesn't exist, now it exists. But something like electricity, like an electrical appliance that's turned on and off, so because it's turned on and off, it's constantly going in a state of quote-unquote existing and non-existing. So therefore, you're not creating anything permanent. So he rejected that it was makah b'patish, that it was the final hammer blow. He also rejected that it was building. So, and because basically for the two reasons that you're not, that it's something that opens and closes. For example, take the example of a wall with a door, right? Why don't I say that when I close the door, I did the final hammer blow. Now I have a complete wall. So you'd be in trouble because then you can't open and close your door. But the reason it's not is because the door is meant to be open and closed. So you're not actually completing something. So that was one approach to electricity. Another way electricity was classified was that it's molid, that it's creating something new. And there's a rabbinic prohibition of creating something new. And this is learned from the Gemara in Beitza, which says in source 13, from Amar Gabe Cheres, Nami Asr Mishum Dekam Molid Recha, that you can't put spices on in earthenware because it produces a new scent. As Rabbi Rav Yosef, the Amar Tarvayu, Sachupe Kasa Shirai Biyomataba Asr. You can't overturn a cup containing perfume and the silk garments on Yom Tov. Why? My time I'm assumed to Kamolid Recha. Because it basically gives birth to a scent. And Rashi says that that's something rabbinically that's prohibited. It's like creating, it says, Davar Hadash, Karav Hu La'osim Malacha Hadash. That it's like a biblically forbidden act because you're making something new. This actually applies if you're putting on, deodorant or something, or on Shabbos, you have to be careful not to spray it on your clothing because of this. So based on this, Yitzhak Shmelkis, the Beis Yitzchak, source number 15, says that this is what we consider electricity, that it's molid. You have something that doesn't exist, right? And then you cause the current to run. And now you've caused something to come into existence. So he said it's not fire, it's not building, so it's only rabbinic, quote unquote, only rabbinic, but meaning that it will be subject to certain leniencies. But what are you doing? How can it be classified? It's classified as molid, as creating something new, a rabbinic prohibition. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach again argues on this. And he says that something that's not sustainable, and that if you're creating and recreating, then you're turning on and off something, so that may not be considered molid. So at the end of the day, the general, obviously ask your posek for specific questions, but I think the general practice among most halakhic authorities, well, if you went to your Rav with a question, the general practice is to treat electricity other than incandescent light bulbs as a rabbinic prohibition, generally treated as molid, and therefore there can be some leniencies when it comes to situations of great need, when it comes to situations of asking a non-Jew to perform the act. And for the most part, that's more or less the consensus of the postgame, that electricity, that something that doesn't get hot, other electrical devices, that would be something like a fan, or maybe just operating a computer, that would be rabbinically prohibited. Don't announce this too much, because then people might not take it seriously. Of course, we still follow rabbinic laws, but that's generally what the post can consider other types of electricity other than incandescent light bulbs. And Rasher Weiss, contemporary authority, disagrees, but that's generally the practice. So just to go back to our case, the operating the Zoom, let's say you need to refresh. So if you say that it's fire, so that would depend how it works. How, if we can say that the fire that's already running is considered to be existing, and therefore turning the computer on or adjusting it would just be considered transferring or working from an existing plate. Again, but you have many posting who say that that's not the reality of how electricity works, and therefore it would be creating something new as far as the fire. But two, according to most of the postgame, something like a computer would not be in the category of fire, but would be in the category of molid, of creating. So it's rabbinic. Again, be careful of what you wish for. If it's fire, it's biblical, but on Yom Tov, you may have a leniency. If it's rabbinic, if it's molid, if it's creating, then it's rabbinic, but you don't have that leniency on Yom Tov. So I think the consensus of this majority of the halakhic authorities is that it's molid, it's rabbinic, but it would not be allowed to, you would not be allowed to turn on or off any electrical devices on Yom Tov. But here's another problem. And it's a problem that the rabbis who wrote this position didn't mention, right? We see that there are three concerns that they presented may exist, and they rejected those. But there's another concern. When you have a screen, so you're creating an image, right? I'm in front of my computer now. I go over here, right? I don't exist. Now I come over here. Did I just draw a picture of myself? Is this considered part of the forbidden labor of writing? What do you think?
Sounds like you did.
No, because it's just a representation digitally of what you did. It's not necessarily what you did.
Meaning your action, the action of moving in front of the screen isn't directly connected to the image that appears.
Yes.
Right. So that is how many post-gim basically understand electronic video or now digital pictures. So there is within the malacha of kosev, of writing, it's not only writing letters, but it's making any sort of meaningful image. The Rambam says, it's called roshem, it's marking. And he says roshem is in the category of writing, and it includes making markings or images on a wall or a gate, and so that would be considered within the category of writing. So back in, before the 80s, or before the late 80s, there's a question about closed circuit security type cameras, right? You live in many apartment buildings and now in many shuls, you walk into a building, so there's a security camera there. So what do? Why can I walk into, or can I walk into a building that where I'm going to be in front of a security camera and my image is going to appear on a screen?
Ruach nefesh. Or nefesh.
I don't know if you could say this. Anytime a security camera is real pikuach nefesh. I mean, pikuach nefesh is generally, I hear the concern. There's definitely a security concern.
Or I think it may be a jump. Yeah.
So Rav Moshe Feinstein said that overall it would not be an issue. That one, you are making an image or causing an image to be made on the screen, but one, it's not lasting, right? In fact, meaning I step away from the computer, the image isn't there. And two, how I understand at least the technology works, it's constantly recreating the image, so it's not lasting. And the assumption is that I don't really care about my image being on the screen. So why does it matter whether I care or not? So we have a principle in the laws of Shabbos, because the labors that are forbidden on Shabbos are modeled after those that were done in the construction or operation of the Mishkan. So there's a principle that we have that in order for it to be liable on a Torah level, it has to be what's called Malechus Makshebes. That it has to be some sort of intentional action, some sort of purposeful action. So it has to be an action that I'm interested in. So the assumption is that I don't really care about the image being on the screen, right? I'm walking by, I'm in the building, there's a security camera. I don't care about the image being there, right? Does anybody, when they walk by a security camera, are they particularly interested their image is showing up somewhere? No, probably not. Sometimes, little kids are, they go, and I remember when I was a little kid, you'd have the security camera, you'd go in front of there, or actually my favorite was in my grandparents' building. So when you had like 13 channels on TV, so they would have you turn to like channel 13 and you get to see the lobby, right? You'd have the car, you get to see the lobby. And me and my sister watched that all day. Who's coming in? It was like the best show. So then maybe, and you'd go down, you see if someone would wave to you. So then maybe there are, but by and large, I don't think most people are. So between that and the fact that it's rabbinic, there are many poskim said that there are grounds to be lenient. Rabbi. However, there could be an issue, even if I don't care about the action happening, it could be an issue if what I'm doing will definitely result in a prohibited action. And this principle is called psik reshet. Psik reshet in Aramaic literally means cutting off the head. And the way the Gemara says it is that it says, is it possible to cut off the head? To cut off the head of a chicken and it doesn't, the lo yamos, and it doesn't die. Meaning, let's say the cutting in and of itself may not be anything prohibited, but it's definitely going to, an action is definitely going to happen. So maybe that's an issue here. Maybe I don't really care about it. And I'm just walking. I'm not doing anything that's prohibited. But if the action is definitely going to happen, maybe that could be a problem. So Rav Shmuel Vozner presents several grounds to justify being lenient. If a person is in a situation where, let's say, they walk and a sensor may go off, or they may go in front of a camera, so he says that it can be lenient based on. He brings the following case. Let's say a person there's a debate among the early halakhic authorities. There's one of the 39 forbidden labors on Shabbos is trapping. Let's say I just go into my house. I don't even care about an animal. I go into my house, I close the door. Did I do an act of trapping? So it's a argument between the Rashba and the Ran, two of the Rishonim. So the Rashba says, I didn't do anything, I closed the door. You know, this is just what I'm doing in my normal course of action. The Ran says, no, but at the end of the day, it's what's called a psik reshet. You close the door, and then the animal becomes trapped. So Rav Vozner says that we haven't totally resolved that issue, but we kind of have another basis for leniency. And that's the case of closing the door, and it, you know, traps the deer. At least they did some sort of action that it could theoretically be relevant to that forbidden labor. I didn't care about it, it wasn't my intention, but at the end of the day, I did that action. But he says, when I'm just walking, I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing anything that's connected to any type of forbidden labor. So he says, even if the result, you know, may be, you know, the outcome of a forbidden labor, but if I'm not doing any type of action, so that could be another grounds for being lenient about things like walking. If you walk in a place and, you know, there are security cameras.
I'm here a minute.
I'm sorry? Okay, so here's now with the camera issue. So here's the problem. We said that there are that the main basis upon which one can be lenient is that you don't care about. But what am I doing when I'm in front of my computer zooming with someone? Do I care about it?
You do care.
Yeah, that's the whole point. I'm doing it because I want someone to see me. So then you really have a problem, because then a lot of these leniencies go out the window. So one, and that's, so you're going down, that's what Rav Herschel Schachter says is one issue. That's the issue of Roshem, that you're in front of a screen. That's creating an image, right? I'm going in front of my screen. Essentially, I'm drawing an image of myself. Maybe rabbinic, but that it wouldn't be allowed. One other consideration: what about the sound, or the video itself? So there's in general, one is allowed to set something in motion, even if an action will become complete on Shabbos. But the Gemara says in Source 21. That we can't put wheat kernels into a water mill unless they'll all be ground while it's still day on Friday. Why? Because it makes noise. What's the issue of making noise? It's a issue called hashmas kol, of making a sound, of avshem milsa, b'shabas v'ika zilusa. That it's considered that it displays a certain contempt for Shabbos. It's not conducive for the spirit of the day. And that's why the things that make sound are problematic on Shabbos. And Rav Moshe Stern, the Bear Moshe, the Deborah Tziner, says that that could be an issue within a building with what has a security camera. Then you're projected on a screen, so it may not be an issue from the writing perspective, but it's an issue from the denigration of the day. And here she says, if you can't work around it, or there's no way to avoid it, you should move somewhere else. Again, some other post-game are more lenient, but takes into consideration of that it's a zilzil, that it displays a certain contempt for the dead. So those are some of the issues. I know we covered a lot. We could spend months and months on this, but those are some of the issues involved with electricity. One is what's the status of electricity? Incandescent bulbs are fire. Others are considered either building or creating, and different ramifications for Shabbos and Yom Tov respectively. So now what about our case? So Rav Herschel Schechter, addressing this question, ruled the following. He says that if someone isn't ill, and earlier on in this tshuva, he says if there's any type of concern for danger, then he permitted calling on Yom Tov. It'd be at least doubtful whether it's pikuach nefesh. And when there's a doubt about pikuach nefesh, then there are many more leniencies with Shabbos and Yom Tov. But he says if there's not a concern, but he says ach makmas amatzav shel makla hakorona hu chayiv lasher ba'atzmo b'shvil hayom tov. But he says because of the situation, someone is required to remain home. But he says that there's not his she'ein bo shemet shel tzikanas nefashos, and if there's not any concern of danger, so he says ein makom lahatir l'chal shabbosus v'yamim tovim. Then there's no grounds for allowing violation of Shabbos and Yom Tov. So he says that if a person really doesn't know how to conduct their Seder, they're going to be unable to do it themselves. He says, if there's a great and pressing circumstance, it may be allowed, and he relies on certain poskim who certainly treat electricity as rabbinic, to start a phone call before Yom Tov and keep the phone on. But again, he says that it's only if there's a pressing circumstances. But he says the screen is going to be a problem because of Roshan, because it's creating an image. So, and he says the preferably what one should do if a person doesn't know how to conduct the Seder themselves. So they should try to learn. And at this point that he wrote it, there was still a couple of weeks before Pesach. So they should try to prepare. He says if someone is unable to do so, there's other pressing needs. There may be grounds to use the audio, but not the video. But again, I imagine this question, if it was a year earlier, may have been answered differently, at least for widespread consumption. And the final source I want to look at, Yosef Tzvi Rimon, had the following suggestion. You have the Hebrew, and there's a translation. So he proposed the following idea. And I think, like Moshe was expressing before, that it was an unusual time, it was a very, very difficult time. And halakhic authorities have to and do take that into consideration. But he said there's still going to be a couple of problems. He says the suggestion has been made, it could take another 2 minutes, to utilize Zoom in order to connect families during the Seder night. But he says that there are halakhic problems, assuming even with leaving it on. But he assumes that there will definitely be a problem with adjusting it. And it's very hard to prevent having to adjust it, the temptation will be too great. But he says, the problem is very real. People will be left alone on Seder night, especially senior citizens, and in time, some will be completely isolated. And he says it poses a great danger for them. It's forbidden to take risks, despite the anguish of being alone, meaning subjecting oneself to exposures to the virus. So he proposes the following. He says, what should families do? Daven mincha earlier in the afternoon, and an hour or two before sunset, everyone should get dressed in their Yom Tov finest, gather the family, and go on Zoom then. Now, true, halakhically, you don't need someone like Rav Rimon to tell us this, but he felt that this was important as guidance to people. And he said Erev Pesach was back in the times when we were able to, and please God, assume we will be able to, offer the Korban Pesach. So all the preparations were, the slaughter was Erev Pesach. So Erev Pesach, he says, is considered a real holiday. So everyone get dressed in the Yom Tov finest, get together with the family on Zoom, sing your favorite song, say the Ma'arish Tana, and then a few minutes before sunset, turn everything off, and then have the regular Seder. And he says that this was, did anyone do this, by the way? So I have to say, I had heard about it before Pesach, and I thought, okay, what's really the novelty? You know, of course you can do that. And I have to say, when I was looking at it now, fortunately, my grandmother passed away after exposure to Corona. She was still around on Pesach. And I was looking at this. I think this is a very beautiful idea. And I have to say, I wish that, you know, that I had taken advantage of this idea. But I think it shows that the way, you know, a great posek thinks is you can't allow everything, but you have to acknowledge that, you know, that the problems are real. And at the very least, suggest practical solutions that can, you know, that can make people's lives easier and make Yom Tov more pleasant. And again, going back to this idea from the technical.
I did that, by the way.
So this is very nice, right?
No, it's terrible.
Okay.
Seriously, like you said, I don't need a rabbi to tell me that. And I didn't need a rabbi to tell me that.
Right, so it wasn't a novel ruling, but it was something
I had my kids. We did it for 2 hours. It was a joke.
It definitely wasn't the same. I usually go back to the U.S. on Pesach, and it ended up being, you know, you make it work, but it was definitely difficult, and you know, definitely don't want to minimize that.
Rabbi, I know of families that have very young children, all right, and they do that before this month because they want their young children who are, say, 4 years old, 5 years old, to have that participation and learning of the Seder. To
Right, we did that with our kids. And
so people do this.
It's a very right. It wasn't halakhically, it wasn't innovative, but I think the job of a rabbi, in addition to giving halakhic guidance, is to give practical guidance. And I thought, Ramon's idea, at least the way he presented it, was very beautiful. So I know there were a lot of technical components of this. There weren't too many technical components, but I think this shows that, without a doubt, the situation this year was very unusual. And I think those who came out with the psak that was highly contested, it came from a place of wanting to enhance observance of Yom Tov. At the same time, the sentiment was that even in the situation that we're in, we have to be careful, one, about the halakhic issues, and there are many, but we have to be careful about setting precedent. And you know, we do want to continue Judaism and halakha the way that we practiced it before, and hopefully, please God, that we'll be able to do that soon. But it shows that the principles that that were involved with constructing the Mishkan, you know, way back when are still operative. They're applied to new situations. And it shows how halacha always responds to new technology, new situations. And hopefully we should, as even the ruling of the Moroccan rabbi said, hopefully this would only be a one-time question. Hopefully next year we will be able to all get together, or we'll be able to get together in our chaburos, in our groups for the Karban Pesach, all be healthy and be able to celebrate Yom Tov together.
Amen. Yishkoyach.
Yishkoyach. Amen.
Rabbi.
Yes, Avram.
The idea, first of all, of the audio being okay and the video not, the audio, you know, if a person speaks loudly, they're amplifying their voice. What's the difference between the phone and the microphone? And the second is, what's the video mean, an image? I don't understand.
So a phone and a microphone, that's a question. It could be that the current is adjusted, but as Schechter says, there are certain situations, particularly it's applied to hearing aids, where many post-game are lenient. But that's not everyone agrees, but at least Rav Schechter says that in a very pressing circumstance, there would be more grounds to be lenient with something like the audio than with the video. So you're saying, what if with the video and the projection of the screen? So essentially, when you go in front of a screen, so you're making an image of yourself.
Uh-huh.
Right? I step in front of a camera. I'm not there. Essentially, I'm drawing a picture of myself. Many people can say that that's only rabbinic because it's not lasting, but that's the idea, that you're making some sort of image.
Okay. And the phone is not a problem. It doesn't create an electric current of some sort.
So some posts can do. Assume actually Yitzhak Shmelkis, the Beis Yitzhak, who held that the electricity was molid, she has also a problem with speaking into a phone. So, and not to say that a phone isn't problematic. And Rav Schechter says that it's only in a situation of exceptional need. But Rav Schechter says that a phone would be more able to allow in extreme circumstances using the phone than standing in front of a computer and making an image. Yes, you're calling, Avram. Thanks for joining.
You're welcome. Thanks for letting me use it with your phone.
Of course. My pleasure. Not on Shabbos, though.
All right.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Any questions? I know this is a lot on a little more technical than we usually get into, but
Can you, Rabbi, just say something about the light sensor that people have, say, on their homes, and you walk by it not knowing that there's a light sensor there, and you trigger
motion detectors.
You trigger the light.
Right. So that is a discussion among the postkin. Rav Vosner, who we saw, presents several grounds for leniency if it's just in the way that you're walking and you really don't care about it. If you do care about it, like if it's in your own house, or perhaps if you definitely know it's going to go on, that could be more problematic. Some do recommend, if possible, to avoid a triggering a sensor. Though I ask Shar Shemayim, ask Rabbi Straffler about any of this, but in situations where it's not avoidable, the main grounds for leniency is that it's just in your way of walking and you don't care about it going on.
For the first time, but then once you know it's there, you do care, right?
Well, do you care about the light? Meaning maybe it's nice to have light, but would I be just as happy walking if the light didn't go on?
But you care because you don't want to trigger it a second time.
Right. So what I mean by care, meaning is the light beneficial to you? Do you want to benefit from that light?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's something we encounter, you know, frequently. You never know who has motion sensor lights. But right, the main grounds for leniency would be that, you know, just in your path, and it's not something that you particularly care about. But some of us can recommend if one can avoid it to try to avoid it.
I'd like to ask something. Sorry I came late. You may have discussed this at the very beginning. And that is, there's a difference of tzorech l'achilas ochel and yom tov, using fire for achilas ochel. In other words, on yom tov you may cook.
Right. So there's a principle. So there's a principle in the Gemara in Beitza. It says that those.
I was just looking it up, Beitza.
It's like Yud. Oh yeah. The Gemara, it's like Yud Aleph, I think. That says that the Makalov is Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. The opinion of Beis Hillel.
Yildav Yantzav. Yeah.
Is that that's something that's permitted for cooking needs will also be permitted in other contexts. Right. So for example, carry. The permission to carry on Yom Tov is that, okay, I have a meal somewhere, I have food somewhere, I want to carry it somewhere else. But once you're allowed to carry food, you're allowed to carry other things. Right. Or, you know, once you're allowed to transfer fire for cooking food, you could transfer fire for other Yom Tov needs. So that's why we allow certain labors on Yom Tov, even if we're not using them in the preparation of food, because those labors are used in the preparation of food.
And even many things that would not normally use, but for Tzorech L'achilas Ochel, for instance, even shechting, you can do if you need it.
Right. If you need an animal for that day, you can shecht on Yom Tov.
And you can go to the butcher and buy meat.
Commerce would still be an issue.
Yeah, all right. But you do it, you don't pay, and you don't use the scale to weigh it. There are other ways of...
You can check. If you can do the principle, you know, if you can do it just as well before, so then you would do it before. But I don't know the cow to eat. I mean, check the animal, so yeah.
But suddenly you get unexpected guests and you don't have and you need.
So you can cook more.
You can even go and buy and chef and cook and do all this.
Right, if there's a realistic possibility, you'll have people come.
Yeah. Thank you. Shkoyach.
Rabbi, I was totally lost on what you're saying here. Are you saying on Yom Tov you can go out and buy food?
No. But you can shecht an animal if you want.
And who's going to do the shechting?
There you are.
Okay.
Or a shochet. Right. You can, the Torah says you're allowed to, ochel nefesh, you're allowed to do labors at Yom Tov in order to prepare food. So if I don't have any meat to eat on Yom Tov, I'm supposed to eat meat on Yom Tov, so I can shecht an animal.
Well, who says you have to eat fleishiks?
Well, on Yom Tov, you're supposed to.
Yeah.
But also, even if it's not a mitzvah, it's still a Yom Tov need. See, if you ever, it's Charlie, if you ever get hungry on Yom Tov, go for it.
You get guests that you weren't expecting.
Right. Post-corona, we're all going to your house.
That's kind of...
All right. Thank you, everyone, for coming. And we'll continue next week.
Okay. See you then.